Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. When it comes to saving the world from climate change, there are sort of two main thought tracks, right? There's two main ideas. One is the boring old, hey, let's just stop emitting carbon, right? Let's do all the boring things that we would have to do to inconvenience ourselves, to not emit so much. That's not fun, right? Aren't we having fun exploiting the earth, extracting every possible resource from it, and then polluting the hell out of it in order to continue to consume? So that's one that's one track. And then the other is the very fun Hollywood-esque swoop in and save the day from some impressive technological advancement, and, you know, the application of this technology would require, you know, all of humanity to come together and just save us in one heroic swoop. And for the most part, up to this point, scientists have agreed, and humanity seems to have agreed, that the best option is to try and reduce fossil fuel emissions. At least that should be what the goal is. When I say humanity agreed, I don't mean that they're actually putting forth a Herculean effort to sacrifice their quality of life in order to reduce fossil fuel emissions. But it's kind of been the consensus that, like, that's what we should do, is just stop polluting, stop emitting fossil fuels, those types of things. Well, that's starting to change, right? There have been ideas in the second realm, which is to do geoengineering or other dramatic ideas, which we're going to talk about today, to slow down the warming that the Earth is experiencing. Those ideas have often been concerning. There have been criticisms of those ideas because of unknown potential consequences or known potential consequences, because of feasibility and all those types of things. Well, they're gaining popularity, right? Because the system is becoming more unstable and the situation is becoming a bit more dire, I think people are starting to turn a little bit more towards these sort of band-aid solutions, hoping that they can be effective. And look, I mean, how great would it be if it means we didn't have to stop growing and, you know, treating our economies the same way that we have, and gauging our success on growth and consumption? What if instead all we had to do was trust some scientists somewhere to go, you know, pump a bunch of chemicals into the atmosphere, and that's all that really has to be done, and all this silly climate change talk can go away? Well, as those ideas have begun to kind of take place or secure, you know, a hold and a place in people's minds, a group of scientists came out and said, hey, hold up, everybody. We're going to go through some of these ideas and really scrutinize them and tell you why this is a terrible idea. And furthermore, not just is it a bad idea to apply these ideas, it's a bad idea to consider them because they are a distraction. So this is specifically, this article and this study that we're talking about today is specifically in regards to polar ice. We know that ice in Antarctica and in the Arctic is melting rapidly. The poles are warming at a rate 3 to 5 times faster than the rest of the planet, which is terrible in so many ways, especially because of the possibility of tipping points being passed that will cascade the rest of the planet into rapid warming. So while many of these ideas that we're about to talk to have some crossover, some of them have some crossover into ways to reduce warming over the entire planet, this study is specifically in regards to how to slow the melt of polar ice. Now, this is titled, I'm going to read both a bit from the article and a bit from the study. The article that I'm going to read is from The Times in the UK, which is titled, "Scientists Warn Polar Ice Fixing Plans Are Flawed and Dangerous." Subheading, "Proposals from seawater pumping to giant underwater walls are criticized as unworkable, unsafe, and a distraction from tackling the root cause of climate change." The study itself is titled, "Safeguarding the Polar Regions from Dangerous Geoengineering, a critical assessment of proposed concepts and future prospects." Now, this study was done by, it looks like, 42 international scientists. So it's not like this was just one dude who, you know, spent 10 minutes putting together a list. This is a very large study. And what they did was they took five different plans or five different ideas that are currently gaining popularity. And they talk about the feasibility, they talk about the costs, they talk about the potential negative consequences to the environment, they talk about governance, in order to assess whether each of these ideas is feasible and worth the time and money and research and potential distraction that is sort of being put into them in order to determine if they're feasible and move on to the next steps for each. So the five ideas that they talked about here, one was pumping water to the surface in winter. So basically they would build pumps that would go into the ground, pump water up to the surface of the Arctic and of Antarctica in order to kind of build up the amount of ice frozen there. They also looked at building walls, literal 300 meter, so 1,000 foot high walls in the water to prevent warm water from approaching the ice shelves and keeping cool water inside. They also looked at injecting aerosols into the atmosphere. So that's just sort of your typical geoengineering, which reflects sunlight back into space. They also talked about removing water from the base of ice sheets to reduce that flow of the ice sheets out into the ocean. In addition to like removing water, they also talked about putting in artificial pinning points and some ideas around that to like basically block ice from flowing out into the ocean. And then lastly, they talked about scattering glass beads over the ocean to reflect the sun. So in an effort to increase albedo, which is the reflection of sunlight back out into the atmosphere, the idea there is prevent the ocean from absorbing heat and protect it with a layer of glass beads. Now, if you haven't heard of these ideas before, they might sound silly to you, right? And in some ways, they are. That's exactly the point that the article is trying to make. It feels, again, like this sort of dramatic movie solution where we're going to save the world by pouring, you know, 10 trillion glass beads into the ocean, or we're going to build a literal 1,000-foot high wall to block warm water from reaching the Arctic, or we're going to build 10 million pumps into the sea ice, 1 million pumps per year to get that water, you know, up onto the surface to freeze. When it comes to the issues that the scientists addressed for each of these, scale came up over and over again. You know, I just said that pump-wise, you'd need 10 million pumps, which is just an absurd amount, production and construction and technology, right? When it comes to the wall, the scale of that wall, it's not just that you would need a 1,000-foot high wall in one spot. It's the feasibility of the length of that wall that is needed and the amount of time for construction, right? On top of the scalability also comes cost. We're talking, you know, $500 billion to $1 trillion a year to build and maintain many of these ideas. And the study does note that, hey, yeah, we recognize that's, you know, 1% of global GDP, but who's going to be willing to foot that bill? You know, is it actually feasible to expect people to pay that? And how are we going to get the sort of consensus and agreement needed in order to make that actually happen? And then on top of all that, they say, okay, and now we do have governance problems. Good luck, again, getting consensus, not just on cost, but on the actual carrying out of this plan. How are we going to get agreement and make sure that it's done in an appropriate way. Is it a democratic, you know, choosing? Because Antarctica and the Arctic are international areas. They're not owned by any one country. How do we decide what the correct resolution is? And lastly, most importantly, how do we decide what the correct resolution is and come to a consensus on that when there are consequences, when there are negative consequences, known and unknown, for each of these different options? You know, is it fair for the entire world, even if there was a democratic way to, you know, to vote, is it fair for the world to make a decision that could affect negatively and very severely one part of the world? You know, let's say that carrying out one of these activities in Antarctica could severely affect, you know, southern Argentina and Chile in the Patagonia. Do we just say, ah, well, that's just a minor part of the population of the world, and so the rest of the world votes on it? And suddenly that area and the millions of people there are facing severely negative consequences, right? Or, you know, how do we mitigate risk and say, okay, well, maybe there's only a 3% risk that this actually worsens the environment in the rest of the world, or it severely destroys an ecosystem local to the area. And yeah, there's a small chance that could have a cascading failure on ecosystems around the world, but let's decide together, you know, and vote on whether or not that's a worthwhile solution. From the article, it just quotes some of the actual study. I'm just going to read a little bit of this. It says, according to our expert assessment, none of these geoengineering ideas pass scrutiny regarding their use in the coming decades. Instead, we find that the proposed concepts would be environmentally dangerous. One of the authors of the study, his name is Martin Siegert. He's a professor of geosciences at the University of Exeter. He said that these solutions raise false hopes and could prove a distraction for other research and efforts to tackle climate change. He said that even looking beyond the five ideas, he had not heard of any approaches that could work to turn back the clock on the melting ice caps. Quote, I've not seen one, but it doesn't mean that it couldn't potentially exist. Instead, he says the world should focus all its efforts on cutting the carbon emissions driving global warming that is changing the poles. So that's sort of the catch-22. You can only focus on one or the other. And if we focus on cutting carbon emissions, and if we're actually focusing on that in, again, the scale that it needs to take place, there is also a cost for that, right? There are consequences to that. There's scale to that. And there is huge problems with consensus and governance around that. Are we going to agree as a planet, right? Everybody on the planet, every government, to sacrifice our own economic gains or technological gains to reduce our pollution, right? To reduce the amount of CO2 that's being emitted. Now, many nations have agreed to that. Are they doing it? Most are not. In the geopolitical situation that we find ourselves in, do we really expect that, you know, there won't be one or several countries that will take advantage of the other countries if they were to reduce their carbon emissions, right? If most countries are saying, I'm going to reduce, my economic output, or I'm going to reduce our technological advancements or whatever that might be, of course there are going to be other nations that are going to exploit that, that are going to say, these suckers who, you know, are sacrificing, it's so easy for us to now become the top nation in the world and all the geopolitical risks that come with that. So that's why I think, you know, one of the main reasons we don't see this actually happening in an actual consensus on this is because it becomes a, just like there was a nuclear arms race, right? This is the opposite. It's who is refusing to do the sacrifices necessary is the nation that gets to stay on top. On top of that, reducing the carbon emissions necessary is likely in and of itself going to cause collapse. And that's the catch-22 of collapse. We either continue to emit fossil fuels and have climate change forced upon us in its most, you know, ugly iteration, or we reduce as much as we can. We cut out the carbon emissions as much as possible. But in so doing, we collapse ourselves, albeit a much more palatable type of collapse. So that's what these scientists are saying. We need to focus on reducing carbon emissions. It's not about finding some fancy solution, some save the day thing here at the end. It's the steady decrease of carbon emissions over time. Stick to the plan. Now, not everybody agrees with that. And this is a little bit, this is where things get a little tricky, is when scientists don't agree with each other. You know, it's like the whole divide and conquer thing. Now, are we going to get bickering amongst scientists? It feels kind of like Don't Look Up, where like that comet is just barreling towards us. And there's all these different solutions being presented. Some of them quite absurd. Some of them are more safe. Obviously, I say it's kind of like Don't Look Up. That's the exact premise of Don't Look Up, right? They decide to try and extract resources from the meteor in order to enrich themselves instead of, you know, they abandon the very safe solution, the one that is at least pretty sure to work, in favor of the more risky but more lucrative idea. And in the end, that sort of bickering and time wasting and distraction is what causes their deaths when the last-ditch effort doesn't work. So the article goes on to talk about some of the other scientists saying, however, scientists pursuing geoengineering research called into question the study's claims that such experiments are a distraction and they could be a net exponential harm. Professor Hugh Hunt, deputy director of the Center for Climate Repair at the University of Cambridge, said there was no proof that pursuing polar engineering was a distraction from time and resources being used for cutting emissions. There's no evidence for this, he said. Sean Fitzgerald, also at the University of Cambridge, said we are faced with severe environmental damage without geoengineering. So rather than saying we should not look further into geoengineering, we should instead be seeking a debate about the relative risks of either trying to learn more about our options of geoengineering or preserving a paucity of knowledge and watching the environmental damage unfold before our eyes whilst we decarbonize the world. My personal feelings on the matter, if there is a potential solution, I think it should be looked into, but I think it should be very honestly scrutinized. In the world of business, they say fail fast and fail cheap. I think that needs to be the same thing here. Look, if it is going to require a ton of resources just to research, let's find out at the very least, you know, if this is an overall feasible idea or not. What are the negative potential consequences? And we should not be moving forward with an idea if there's a possibility that it worsens the situation, and if it's at a cost that a scale and cost that we're not going to be willing to pay. Do I think it's a distraction? I personally do. Why? Because I think that so many people, such a large portion of the population, hears about these things and views it as a sure thing. Oh, there's this idea, there's this amazing technology that's going to save us so we can continue on like normal, business as usual, and we continue to barrel towards our demise, right? I think governments do the same thing. They will find and cling on to any excuse to not have to degrow. And these ideas are the perfect thing for them to latch onto in that regard. Okay, thank you for being here. Thanks for listening. We'll speak again tomorrow. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.